Today's episode of Rob as a Podcast is sponsored by The Great Courses. You know, The Great Courses is the best way to learn about a number of different subjects. It's how I learn about poetry when Stephen Fishback is out playing Survivor. And now I'm especially excited about The Great Courses Plus video learning service because now I have access to a huge library of The Great Courses lecture series in so many different fascinating subjects like the fundamentals of photography, which I recently was able to check out in partnership with National Geographic. It's a great way to learn how to take stunning photographs and improve how we capture the memories of what we see and experience through our photos. And with The Great Courses Plus, you could watch fundamentals of photography from start to finish or select specific lectures that you want to focus on, including episode 10, which is about how to improve the composition of your photos. So I'm a big fan of The Great Courses Plus, and I've got a great offer to get you started. Not a good offer, great offer for The Great Courses. Watch the fundamentals of photography and hundreds of other courses free for 1 month. All these fantastic courses are available to you for free for 1 month. You're going to love it. So get started today with this offer. Go to The Great Courses Plus, spell the word out, plus.com/RHAP. Remember the plus, it's The Great Courses Plus.com/RHAP and try it free for 1 month. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino here to talk about why Cass lost on Survivor, and let's bring in the man who we look at his rules, and he's going to tell us why, what went wrong for Cass. Here is our good buddy, David Bloomberg. David, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Oh, very good. Sad to see Chaos Cass end up going by the wayside this week, because you really just feel like, I always felt with somebody like Cass, once she gets to the merge, boom, she's off to the races and nobody's going to be worried about her. So we can talk about Cass and what this ultimately means. And if you agree with Stephen Fishback that maybe there could be a new sort of like seismic paradigm shift in the game of Survivor.
Well, you know, I agree with Stephen on a lot of things, but we'll have to see if I agree with him on this one. And I also don't recite poetry.
Okay, so. Well, that's good. We'll save that for Stephen. We don't want to infringe on him. Anyway, David, how are you doing?
Doing well. You know, last week you asked me what I predicted for this episode, and I said I expected a chaotic merge, but I didn't know that would mean Chaos Cass going home.
Yes, and so unfortunately, Cass is gone. I think there'll still be plenty of fireworks to go along the way, but let's dive right into this. Of course, that David has fine-tuned his Survivor rules for many years of covering the show. And those are all available if you want to check them out at robaswebsite.com/survivor rules. And getting into it, rule number one, you say a survivor must scheme and plot. How did Cass hold up with this?
I think Cass did a pretty decent job here, you know, leading up to this point in the game. She had some solid allies. She also had some loose allies from various earlier tribes. We know for sure that she and Sierra were tight, and somehow she looped in Abby Maria. And you know, I just to digress a little here, I have to tell you, that is some footage I would love to have seen. And I know lots of other fans want to see it too. How did Cass manage to get so tight with Abby Maria? You know, some have speculated there was a pregame alliance, but I think that was based mostly on them hugging each other when their names were announced.
Yeah.
Back at the Worlds Apart finale.
I recall. Yeah. It was like, oh my God, Cass and Abby Maria are friends.
Yeah.
And they hugged each other and they got up. It really was interesting because that we saw earlier in the season at Anchor that Abby Maria seemed to be in Tasha's pocket. And then by this episode, we see that, you know, Abby Maria is with Cass and she's voting for Tasha with an exclamation point, I might add.
Yeah, I mean, how did Cass get her to turn on Tasha when Tasha had been the only other person who had managed to control her? I want that footage. I was hoping it was in the bonus scenes and there was just nothing about that. So I don't know. Survivor producers, you're letting us down here.
David, can I put you on the spot a little bit in terms of Cass? If you had to, and I know you didn't write the column or do a podcast during Survivor Cagayan, did you have off the top of your head what was the reasons why Cass lost in Cagayan?
Why did Cass lose in Cagayan? Woo? Because Wu wanted to give the game to Tony.
So it has more to do with why Wu lost?
I mean, honestly, it really does. you know, I think a lot of it was just Tony's odd ability to get people to do what he wanted them to do. Mm-hmm. And Wu not being very good at the game, you know, and I thought we were done with, you know, Wu last week. So, you know, don't need to talk about him and his strategic feelings anymore. But
I think it really speaks more to whether or not you believe that Cass was going to beat Wu in the final too. Because then if Cass was going to lose to Wu, as lots of people do think she might have, but you never know, then I think then you get into other things about pretend to be nice and stuff like that. But the fact that Wu took her out because he wanted to go with Tony, then that makes it sort of a overall muddy situation. So I just was curious to know if you had any sort of answers on that.
Yeah, I think if he had taken her and she had lost, it would have definitely come down to just the social game and the way so many people had gotten annoyed with the way she had played at the time. I mean, as we'll find out, at least one person on that jury was so pissed off that they stewed for 2 years. So
back to Cass and her scheming and plotting. How do you think she did with this?
Well, you know, the problem was that it seems most of Cass's allies were among the outcasts. And, you know, I'm not talking about the tribe from Savages season.
How dare
it was
you?
Somewhat, yeah.
We don't speak of them.
Well, you know, I don't want to speak of Savage. So, but it was somewhat similar in that these people, well, Savage is looking down on them. And Cass was somewhat playing the game from the outside in that term. It would have been fine if all of those outcast outsiders had stuck together, but they didn't. Cass couldn't get them to rally in her favor.
Yeah.
You know, and you've mentioned over the past week a couple of times that Cass really got screwed by the early merge, and I definitely have to agree with that. If the tribes had lasted one vote longer, it's likely that her tribe would have lost, and they would have voted out Savage. But the merge took her majority and turned it into a minority.
Since you brought up Andrew, can I make an observation, and you tell me if this is off base or not? To me, I think that one of the biggest flaws in Andrew's game is that I feel like he tries to play like his game is sort of like, hey, let's just keep our solid, you know, four or five. Let's take our group and let's go all the way to the end. Sort of like basically the generic BR rules of this is how you get to the end of Survivor. But I think that where the flaw is in his game is that I don't think he does very much at all. Whereas like Boston Rob, for the most part, maybe there'll be like one or two people at the bottom where he's not going to even bother with. But Boston Rob is going to go to everybody in that group and then make sort of a final three. Okay, I've got a final three with, you know, Cass and Sierra. I've got a final three with Jeremy and Tasha. And I've got a final three with, you know, Kimmy and Steven, and sort of like go and work all those people, not just in your core group, but the other people who are also like letting those people who are 6, 7, 8, 9 think that they're 2, 3, 4, 5 in the scenario that they're buying into. And then I think that it's kind of because of Andrew that we're seeing these people who are saying like, well, I don't want to just come in like 7, 8, 9, 10th place. And so I think that's why they're sort of like mounting this failed rebellion against him, because they feel like they are not in that inner circle at Bayon. Even though he's saying Bayon strong, they're saying, yeah, well, what is that going to get me?
Well, right, right. And, you know, my prediction was that we might be talking about Savage today, and who knows, maybe we'll be talking about him a week from now. But, you know, I do think that that is a big part of it. He comes in, he gives orders, he says, this is the way we're going. And I suspect that that's the way he is in life. Mm-hmm. You know, I know and have worked with people who are similar to that. You know, they are just the type of people who come in and they make commands. And in their business life, those commands are followed. And he hasn't still figured out that this isn't his business life. And so he is saying, Bayon strong, we are going, this group is going, let's go. And he doesn't feel like he needs to do anything more than that. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't realize that there are other people out there who, you know, maybe they don't want to just wait until it's their turn to be picked off.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I, you know, maybe we'll be talking about that more next week. Maybe it'll be longer than that, but
yeah. I think it's just an interesting observation in terms of his game because, you know, he does come from an old school season. And I feel like he is playing a very old school game without the sort of nuance to sort of be continuing to sort of sell something to the people. Like even in like you brought up the, you know, the corporate world, I think that a really effective leader of a company is not just like having his like sort of like, you know, other top members and officers in the company invested, but also down to like the lowly, you know, entry level employees, like sort of like getting them to buy in to what his vision for the company is. And it seems like the people at the top are all sort of on board, but it's all these people that are like sort of like dealing with the public and sort of like the people at the bottom of the totem pole. They don't seem like they're buying in very much to what his vision is for that group.
Oh, right. Definitely. I said I've dealt with those people. I didn't say I necessarily like those people. So,
yeah. Okay. So, Cass is scheming and plotting. So, that is not the reason why she lost.
Correct.
All right. Did Cass scheme and plot too much?
Well, remember, there's a couple of parts to this. There's don't scheme and plot too much. And then the second part is keep your scheming secret. And obviously, Cass didn't keep her scheming secret here, but nobody did. I mean, there were people scheming right in front of the other players that they were talking about. They're not even bothering to be secretive about it. That was bizarre to me. I don't know that we've ever seen that. Everybody just gathered around and talking about the people next to them and not even caring about it. But
mm-hmm. You're talking about that big group of nine?
Well, the big group, but even beyond that, people were in the shelter talking to other people about other people who were right near them in the shelter, or they had walked a little bit away, or... You know, I think Steven mentioned it in his blog that people didn't even bother. There were too many of them there. So they were just all talking about each other to each other right there.
Yeah. Well, I guess there are spies everywhere. It's like King's Landing. So you just might as well just have your conversation out in the open.
Yeah. So Cass did too. And, you know, once the Bion Strong Alliance had reformed, it seems clear Cass was the target right from the get-go, or at least one of the major targets. So through the various conversations around camp, it seems that everyone knew where everyone else stood, with a couple exceptions who were wavering a little bit. So we know she didn't keep it secret, but did she scheme and plot too much? That's a more difficult one. I'd say certainly did her scheming and plotting in a way that I would not recommend, by trying to blow up Tasha's game in front of everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And the question there is whether that was a violation of this rule or the fourth rule about not letting your emotions control you.
But to me, I feel like at that point, it was already too late for her. I think that the writing was already on the wall, and this was Cass trying to say, well, I'm pretty sure I'm going to get voted out anyway now, so let me try to, you know, see if I can get something to stick, would be getting Tasha to sort of blow up at me. To me, the did Cass scheme and plot too much, I think, goes back to last week's episode, where she had the opportunity to stick with the buy-on plan and go with Andrew and stick with Wu. Was that scheming and plotting too much to go behind Andrew's back, vote out Wu, and try to get something going at the second or the third version of Takeo with Sierra and Spencer?
I'd say no, based on the information that she had at the time. You have to try to predict what the producers are going to do, but I don't think anyone predicted the earliest merge ever.
Mm-hmm.
And if she had just stuck with the plan and gone by on strong, well, then she's at the bottom. She knows she's at the bottom of that group. So she had to do something to try and turn things around. So I think with the knowledge that she had, voting out Wu was the best plan she could do.
To me, I think that what happened to Cass is almost like akin to what happened to your buddy Xi'an back in Thailand, where it's almost like, okay, Cass was like, okay, I see this opportunity. I'm going to switch sides here. I'm going to go with the Takeo group or go with Spencer, and then I'm going to switch away from my alliance at this point in time. And then it was like the early merge happened and it was like, you assumed you were going to stick with that tribe for another tribal council. And actually you're back with your old tribe and now you're getting voted out.
Yeah. But you keep talking about, you know, Cass's alliance, and I'm not sure that she was ever really part of that alliance. And she may have realized that. I mean, several of them know or knew that they were on the bottom. So even if they say, yeah, Cass, you're part of the alliance. Well, OK, if you're number 9 or number 8, you might as well not be part of the alliance.
Yeah.
And, you know, that goes back to what you were saying about Andrew. If he has made it clear who his top guys are, well, then you know that you're not one of them. And you got to do something to change it up.
To me, Cass's alliance was that group that she was part of at the second version of Takeo with Joe, with Keith, with Kelly Wentworth, with Sierra, that 5. But I think that Cass made that move at that last tribal council, so which sort of outed that group. And then I think you saw guys like Joe and Keith and ultimately Kelly Wentworth sort of have to scurry then to not be associated with Cass. So it was a move where that 5, who knows what would have happened if they came into the merge and they didn't have that sort of heat on Cass. It might have been Spencer being the first person voted out. Well, actually, he would have already been gone. So it might have been, I don't even know who would have gone if it wasn't for what Cass did at the last tribal council. But it probably wouldn't have been Cass.
Yeah, you're right. But I mean, there were so many other things at play there. And like I said, you know, she did get screwed by the early merge. And without that, I really do think we would have been talking about why Andrew lost.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would have been trumpeting her success.
And I'm not begrudging her too much in terms of what happened. I think she took a calculated risk and it didn't pay off. But I, you know, in no way, shape or form, I'm saying like she's an idiot for what right. she did last week. It was just she went for it and it just didn't pay off. But, you know, a lot of times in, you know, I can't blame her for what she did. It seemed like on paper, the odds were going to pay off on that one.
Right. And that's why I'm saying that part was not scheming and plotting too much.
Yeah.
But to get back to, you know, this episode when she blew up. So like I said, it's, I think, a combination of scheming and plotting too much and Rule 4, which talks about letting your emotions control you. So I'm going to vary up the format a little bit here and bring number 4 in at the same time. So, you know, to set the scene here, we know Tasha was openly gunning for Cass. Tasha had lied to Cass. Cass caught her. Cass knew she had to do something to turn things around or else she was gone. She made what was clearly a desperation move, and she decided to bring the chaos by blowing up Tasha in front of the whole tribe, hoping people would turn against her. Now, we've heard, you know, various people from this season and Kageon have said that Tasha has the capability to alienate people. She has a bristling personality, self-righteousness. You know, Varner talked about it after he was voted out. Trish talked about it with you, saying that she was more of a troublemaker than Cass ever was. So I suspect Cass thought she might be able to get people to react to that sort of behavior from Tasha.
Mm-hmm.
You know, plus her lying, if she could bring it out. And that's not a bad idea as far as a desperation moves go. But I think you and Jordan mentioned it on the voicemail show, and I was thinking the same thing, that Cass's move reminds me of Mike Holloway last season, trying to blow up the lies of Rodney. But it was equally unsuccessful for Cass because it blew back in her face, much the way it blew back in Mike's face. Difference is, of course, Mike won immunity, you know, a lot. So, and I think you've discussed this too. It would have been a better move if she had been able to go and talk privately with people. Just like I was thinking at the time with Mike, why didn't you go back and just talk to people privately? Why are you doing this all in public? And I don't know if Cass made that move as a matter of strategy or emotion. You know, we've heard from Cass that she and her small group of allies were treated as pariahs, that no one was allowed to talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
The timing of that feels like it was later after the anti-Tasha blowup. So I don't think that would have been a reason that would have forced Cass to call out Tasha in front of everyone. You know, if I'm wrong and that was literally her only play, then so be it. But I just think that there was some emotion at work here as well. There's a lot of emotion between those two. It's clear that Tasha still bears a grudge against Cass. And I think Cass normally does a great job of deflecting people's emotions back at them. You know, you've described the way she does that.
Yeah.
And I think it's perfect. You know, it's a great thing that a lawyer can do, a good lawyer. And this case, though, I think she was pissed enough at the way Tasha and others turned on her that she just felt she had to blow things up. So Cass said in one of her post-game interviews that you have to expect some blow up when you're starving, sleep deprived, people are telling you that you're going home. And on top of that, she noted in several different interviews that Tasha was making a lot of personal attacks against her on that day, which contributed to her reaction. She said she wasn't just going to roll over and die. And we didn't see those, but it rings true to me. You know, everything that we've heard about Tasha that we haven't seen. And I do wish we would see more of that to see what is really going on there. But for whatever reason, the show has not put Tasha in that light.
Yeah, and it's hard to really weigh in on that because how much of that is perception and sort of body language? Like, I do think that Tasha can be intimidating. So is that more just like sort of like being in her presence that something that people are perceiving seems worse than it actually is? Until we see it, it's hard to weigh in on, you know, what's actually going on. There are some people saying it. Not everybody is coming back and saying those things. So I don't know. I do sense, though, that Tasha is a tough customer. And, you know, if you get on her bad side, I think it's really tough to come back from that.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, the fact that we're hearing it from people who have been with her on two different seasons and have no other particular reason to be vindictive against her. You know, when we first heard it, there were some people who were saying, oh, that doesn't sound like her. But after two or three or four different people say it, it starts to sound like you're getting a good description there. But, you know, moving away from Tasha for a little bit, I think there was other emotion that was involved for Cass as well, because like she admitted, it was frustrating to try to work with Joe. You know, even after they had a Joe-mance, she just wasn't able to turn people to her side. So maybe she figured if she couldn't do it individually, she would try to force the madness of the crowd and see if that worked. Instead, it just made her more of a target. So, you know, last week, I complimented the gameplay of Cass and Sierra. This week, it turned into the opposite. So Cass was trying to show what a liar Tasha was, but doing it in front of everyone, I just don't think it was the right move, especially since Cass is known to cause chaos. It's her own self-given nickname. And while Tasha may be a liar at times, it just doesn't seem to be her reputation with the group. So Cass said in her day after video that she was hoping people would see that Tasha was sabotaging her game. The problem is that even if they saw it, they didn't do anything about it. You know, and since we're talking about it now, I mentioned Sierra also because I had complimented her on a good move last week. I have no idea why Sierra thought it would be a good idea this week to pile on and target Savage.
Yeah.
You know, she didn't get voted out this week, but she certainly turned herself into an easy target going forward.
Yeah.
I guess she wanted to try to protect her ally, but that was a Hail Mary pass thrown right into the hands of the defender. She should have just kept quiet there.
Well, I think that both of them were sort of in desperation mode, and they both, I feel like instead of maybe trying to work together to like sort of like get the same story out there, it was like Cass had the idea of, okay, I'm going to get Tasha to explode and then everybody's going to see this side of her that I've seen many times before, or this side of her that I know about that's going to really turn people off. And then Sierra felt like, okay, well, I'm going to come up with a different plan. I'm going to make Andrew look bad and then get people in his alliance not trusting him. And just, I think that if they would have sort of like worked in harmony on one thing, I think that probably would have worked a lot better than the individual efforts that they made.
Yeah. And, you know, I think you discussed it too. Picking Savage and saying he was going to turn on his alliance, that just doesn't ring true to anyone who knows Savage. He is not that type of player.
Yeah.
So that certainly made it an even tougher sell.
You know, Sierra is known for the big move. I'm sure she's looking for the thing that will make a big splash for this go round. But yeah, I think that that was not necessarily the right way to go. This is not Brad Culpepper she's dealing with.
Yeah. Have you, Andrew Savage?
Yeah, no, Brad Culpepper. People would have bought that about Brad Culpepper.
Right.
What he was up to. All right. So then, are you going to go back to Rule 3, or you feel like we've covered that?
No, we'll go back to it. You know, and Rule 3, of course, is to be flexible. Be
flexible.
And I think Cass did fine here. She didn't tie herself specifically to any one particular alliance. She made allies in each of the tribes she'd been a part of. Whether or not those allies would stand by her when push came to shove is another matter, but she was at least willing to work with them. And at the point when she was voted out, she was certainly willing to work with anyone who would hear her out. In part, the whole blow up started because she was even willing to work with Tasha if Tasha had been honest with her. She told us that in the early days on original Bion, she made what appeared to be peace with Tasha. So she was open to anything that would help in the game. So, you know, we're fine in terms of the third rule.
Okay, then let's jump to rule number 5, which is pretend to be nice, play the social game, keep your politics and controversial beliefs to yourself. Did Cass do a good job with pretend to be nice, play the social game?
I would say that right up until this episode, Cass did a good job here. She was calm Cass or kumbaya Cass or caring Cass. You know, now that's a lot easier to do when your tribe is winning instead of losing all the time. It takes a lot of pressure off of you. But whatever the reason was, Cass was definitely making friends and influencing people until her past came back to haunt her in the form of Tasha's grudge from Kagyan. You know, once it became clear that Tasha was gunning for her in this way, Cass unleashed the beast. Even then, it's not like she was being horrible to anyone but Tasha. It's just that, as we already discussed, it drew more attention to her. So could she have played nice and maybe convinced a few of the swing votes to stand by her? I guess it's possible, but I just don't think so.
Mm-hmm. I mean, once she has that target on her back, I think that there is a lot of people just don't want to associate with them. You know, it really does turn into the kind of thing where when you're sort of like dead man walking or dead woman walking, you know, people are going to start to steer clear of you. And maybe that speaks to why she couldn't have those sort of one-on-one conversations where people are sort of like, Cass, like, get away from me because I don't want to be the next to go because I'm talking to you. So, you know, she does have to go into desperation mode quicker.
Right, right. And, you know, I think that actually does lead nicely to the sixth rule.
Don't be too much of a threat.
You know, in one of Cass's interviews, she said, maybe I'm a big threat to these people, which is hilarious because I'm the oldest woman out there. But as we know, there are many different kinds of threats. Now, certainly she was not a challenge threat, but is she a different type? And I think the main answer to that is that Cass was a threat to one influential person in particular, and that was Tasha. Despite any apparent mending offenses that might have taken place early in the game, it became clear Tasha still harbors a grudge. She even posted on Twitter, play me once, shame on me. Play me twice, never. Didn't quite get that, you know, saying right, but okay.
I think that she's entitled to some poetic license a la Stephen Fishback.
Yes, yes. And then she also said, in reference to trusting Cass, that you can't do the same thing and expect a different result. So we know that Tasha had influence with Savage, who had influence with the rest of his alliance. If Tasha felt that Cass was a threat and she communicated that to her alliance, then that certainly played a role. And one of the ways that I specifically note a player can be a threat in this rule is to be perceived as being so untrustworthy that people don't know which way you will vote.
Mm-hmm.
Well, hello, Chaos Cass.
Yeah.
She hadn't really brought the chaos this time, but the name she made for herself stuck with her. And chaos is certainly threatening to people who want to be able to predict how a vote will go and control people. And, you know, that's what we were talking about with Savage and those like him in this game. So even Steven noted in his blog that chaos was running rampant in the merge camp, and Tasha said this was exactly what Cass had unleashed in Kagyan. So that is where the threat from Cass came.
Yeah. I mean, to look at it from Tasha's perspective in terms of this vote, you know, she's in an alliance with Cass, and it may be a reluctant alliance at best, but, you know, she's in this greater Bion alliance, which was similar to how they came into the merge. I believe they were new Apari, I think. And so when they came into that merge in back in Kagyan, you had it where Cass didn't feel secure about her position in the group, and she ultimately flipped sides. And then coming out of that vote, when Andrew reports back about what happened, you know, Tasha must be saying to herself, oh my God, she is doing the same exact thing again. She's in our alliance. She's trying to flip to the other side. We can't let that happen. This is exactly what she did the first time around. So that scar is still not yet healed for Tasha. You can understand why she reacts the way that she does to Cass's move from last week's episode.
Right, right. Especially if it's been, you know, eating away at her all this time.
Yes. And it's the same person in a somewhat similar situation. Like, you definitely understand it from a game perspective, probably even a little bit more so here than back in Kagyan for the cast to make the move that she made in this season. But for Tasha, like, that's still fresh in her mind. And just the fact that, see, here's Cass, she's in our alliance, she's trying to flip, we have to get rid of this. This is the biggest threat to the order that we're trying to establish here for the post-merge game.
Right, right. It was deja vu all over again.
The next rule is vote out the weak, then the strong, then the weak, then the strong. Hold on. Where are we then?
Well, normally, at this point in the game, right after the merge, you want to target the strong. And, you know, we'd immediately look at Cass and maybe scratch our heads. You know, Steven noted during tribal council how odd it was to be considering three smaller women than, you know, rather than a big guy. There's a whole passel of those big guys, but for now they're sticking together. But there is more than one type of strength. The other type of strength noted in this rule is a player who can organize others. We saw Cass help organize the Wu blindside just 3 days prior. We know that she's helped flip the game before. Was that the kind of strength that made her a worthy target? Maybe. But I think, honestly, more than anything, this merge did not remind me of a normal merge. It reminded me of what often happens in the very first vote of the season, rather than this deep into the game. You've got all these people. Nobody wants to be voted out first. And someone picks a target for whatever reason. Then everyone piles on that target because they don't want to risk that the target will be changed to them.
Mm-hmm.
It all hinged on a couple players. As, you know, Cass discussed on Entertainment Weekly's Survivor Talk, Keith and Spencer were going to go with Joe, as was Wentworth. So once Joe made his choice, a series of dominoes fell afterwards such that none of them would stand out as being in the minority. They just all went the same direction to avoid causing any problems. So that's, you know, you asked, is this a new paradigm? I don't know that it's a new paradigm. I just think there were so many people there and one was the target and no one else wanted to get in the way. So like I said, it just takes me back to the way first votes are so often done.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. And it's funny that Survivor Talk with Dalton Ross that you mentioned, that Francesca was the guest on that. And I think that is ultimately sort of what happened to her more in Survivor Fans versus Favorites, where she sort of is at the bottom of this avalanche, which ultimately is like, there's a couple people that are sort of swing votes, like Dawn and Cochran. Like, what do you want to do? What do you want to do? Like, okay, let's just all like pile on because we don't want to be associated with Franny here. And ultimately, I think it's just, Brenda and Eric and Brandon Hance that end up going with her. And those are sort of like the Abby Marias and the Sierras in this scenario.
Right, right. And so, it's the rule number 7 normally talks about what the other players should have done. And so, you know, should they have targeted a strong person? Well, I guess, we'll see going forward.
All right. So then we have our two appendixes. Appendixes, is that the correct plural of appendix?
I believe it's appendices.
Appendices. So first, Avendic, do whatever it takes to get idols. Cass did not seem too concerned with the idols other than when she made the friendship bracelet for Kelly Wentworth. So we should move on to the final appendix, second appendix, which is final tribal council for Cass.
Right. And, you know, so that's the jury phase.
And she is queen of Ponderosa.
She is queen of Ponderosa. And so I
long
do
may
think
she reign.
Yeah, well, till the end of the season, probably, unless there's an uprising at Ponderosa. Oh, I'd love to see video of that. So she's standing there, off with their heads. But, you know, I think the jury phase did play a role here because I think that Tasha did not believe the first vote after the merge would make someone a juror. And among other things, this rule talks about seating the jury with people who will vote for you to win. The flip side, of course, is that you want to try to get rid of people who will vote against you before they make it to the jury.
Mm-hmm.
From what we heard this week, Cass believes that Tasha stewed about Kagyan for 2 years and carried that anger into the season. We saw the two of them argue. Things apparently got much more personal and nasty than what we were shown. So it was clear, at least to Cass, that Tasha wanted her out before the jury. So it made sense to target her first. Yep. Surprise, Tasha. It didn't work out that way. So here, Tasha is trying to get rid of someone before the jury. And it turns out, wah, wah, she's going to stay there and stare at them from that jury box the whole time.
An interesting trivia question about Kath. I think she might be the only person in history to have this. She gets voted out day 19, Kath. She will spend 20 days on the jury. Is there anybody that's ever been on the jury longer than they were in the game?
I can't imagine there is, since this is the earliest merge and biggest jury ever.
Yeah. So congratulations, Kath. The answer to a trivia question now.
Now, that assumes she doesn't get pulled from the jury, you know, so you can't make that congratulatory notice just yet. You know, if there's that uprising and they exile her from Ponderosa, you know, but yeah. For now, long live the queen.
Congratulations to Cass. I think that maybe the only other potential season could have been, I feel like there was an early, like a somewhat early merge in Survivor One World. I'm opening up the wiki. Yeah. Jonas was voted out day 20. So I don't know if anybody has Cass beat in terms of a day 19 vote off.
Well, we should send her a congratulatory message.
Yes. All right. That's why she is the queen of Ponderosa.
That's right. That's right. So before we sum up all of our reasons, I did want to talk a little bit about the way the vote went down. It's become clear through various means that almost everyone knew Cass was being voted out before tribal council. And I think we saw that with some of the votes that night, and then more information has come out. The plan to flip Spencer's vote, I think, could have worked if he had been assigned to vote against Cass and switch to Tasha. But we saw him vote against Sierra. So him switching his vote at the last minute wouldn't have worked anyway. If he had switched to Tasha, it would have just created a 5-5 tie, and then the main group would have voted out Cass in the tiebreaker.
Yeah.
Even if Spencer had gotten himself assigned to vote out Cass somehow, and he had switched, well, then they would have won the battle, but they would have come back to camp still firmly in the minority with a rather angry majority, which could have lost them the war. By backing down in this particular battle, they sacrificed Cass, but they kept their own games alive.
Mm-hmm.
So what we've heard is that once Spencer let Wentworth know that he wasn't voting with them, Wentworth told Sierra. That allowed them to change their votes to the votes that we ended up seeing. And then after the episode aired, Wentworth talked to her fans at a viewing party.
Yes.
Someone recorded that and explained that she agreed to go along with Joe and Spencer this time to avoid being at the bottom. Also, Sierra explained on Twitter that she hoped she could salvage a way to work with Tasha. So that's why she didn't vote Tasha, so as not to burn any bridges. But, you know, she'd already burned her Andrew Savage bridge, so she might as well give him a poke in the eye with her vote.
Right.
So that was just interesting trying to, you know, piece together, okay, how did this vote end up this way?
That's a good point about Spencer was one of the people that was supposed to vote for Sierra, not a vote for Cass. So switching things around wasn't going to change anything. But I do sense, though, that if they were able to pull that off, I don't necessarily know if it's sort of a foregone conclusion that that group of five would be the target next time, because maybe you could now pull Joe and Keith over and say, okay, well, you guys have something going on. And there were other, you know, maybe Steven and Kimmy or people that might think about switching over to that group. So I think that you definitely would have had an interesting episode next week.
Yeah, definitely. There would have been a lot of angry Andrew Savage footage with him swearing and kicking the sand.
I suspect we probably get that anyway every week on the show for some reason, but it couldn't hurt to have some more.
Right, right. So, you know, wrapping up with Cass, I guess. She came into the game with a reputation. She did her best to change it, and I think she mostly succeeded right up until that final day. But as she noted in interviews, her past came back to haunt her in the form of Tasha reminding everyone about that reputation. Cass's attempt to change things up by confronting Tasha in public just helped cement everything in the majority's mind. And once the others started lining up, even her own allies had to jump ship. Tasha succeeded in making everyone remember the Cass who caused chaos, who schemed and plotted too much, who caused emotional problems for others, and who was a threat to the majority. And that is why Cass lost.
All right. So Cass, she will go on to the Ponderosa to be the queen of Ponderosa and to be on the jury. The show will go on this Wednesday night. What do you think is going to happen?
Well, the preview for next week makes it look like all hell is going to break loose, with Sierra and Wentworth and Steven talking about making big move and getting rid of someone big, like maybe Joe. There's a lot of talk about blindsides. Even Savage gets in on the act using that word.
So should that be our biggest hint that nothing is going to happen?
Well, you know, I don't know. it could go either way, you know, because some people watched this last preview and said, well, Cass is obviously going, whereas I looked at it and said, Cass is obviously not going. We saw who was right there. It does go back to what I said earlier about those who voted Cass out this time is not really a solid alliance, but it's rather just a group who all voted the same this time for their various reasons. And I had mentioned the Wentworth talking to her fans at a viewing party after noting that she agreed to go along with Joe and Spencer. So who else might play a role? Well, the most active person in the early votes has been much less visible lately. And it looks like it'll stay that way because Abby Maria said in a bonus scene that she is keeping her head down for now. Of course, amusingly, she also said, hopefully the crazies are gone soon enough so that we can actually play the game and play a fun game and enjoy each other.
Yes. Hopefully, Abby Maria.
Yes. Yes. Don't want those crazies out there. So there's some people wondering if she's just trolling us. But no, I think that that's really what her thought was. Also, Spencer pointed out in a bonus scene that there are a lot of big challenge threats right now, and that's just not the way it is in a normal season. So I wonder how big of a role that will play. We've already seen that Jeremy wants to keep Joe for a while as a meat shield, and he may have the right idea. So this takes us into something that you and Jordan were discussing on the voicemails about whether or not Joe should have won that immunity or thrown it. Personally, I have no problem with him winning because, as a player, you just never know what might happen. You guys talked about how he almost has to win out now to avoid someone saying, you know, the first time he doesn't win, oh, hey, this is our best chance to get rid of him.
Mm-hmm.
But who's to say that wouldn't have happened this time?
Yeah.
You know, if he hadn't won, they might have said, well, okay, we can deal with Cass anytime. Let's get rid of Joe now. So I don't think he can ever take a chance. But I do think you and Jordan were right in that he should have flipped and targeted the other challenge threats in this vote. Now, maybe he thinks he's safer with the other meat shields. Because, you know, if people get it into their heads that they should vote out even one of the challenge threats, even if it's not Joe this time, they should target someone else, where does it end? The other people might say, oh, it was good to get rid of that one. Now let's get rid of all of them.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, he could have taken out some challenge competition. He could have been the savior of his alliance. I think it would have put him in a good position. So it's an interesting place for him to be and the other meat shields to be. So, you know, where's it going to go with them? I don't know the answer to that. But Jeremy doesn't just have a meat shield. He has a brain shield with Steven. And, you know, I liked hearing Steven's thoughts in another bonus scene about why he did the poetry recital and how he wants to humanize himself.
Yeah, why did he do it?
Well, like I said, to humanize himself. So he's not just viewed as a game bot.
Oh, that was what that was?
Yeah. yeah, we'll go with that. I didn't know he was an English major until I watched that bonus scene.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you learn new things all the time. So to me, that is what the edit seems to be doing. You know, we can say, okay, there was the dodo music and, you know, it's making him look that way, but it was also humanizing him. And my problem is, I just don't know what the producer's end game is. Is it humanizing him so that in the end, everybody will like him when he wins? Or is it humanizing him so that we'll feel bad when they vote him out? I don't know. Yeah. You know, I still haven't wrapped my head around that. Or are they just doing it to mess with him because he always talks about the type of edit people are getting?
I don't know. I think that to me, I think that the extended poetry scene, if I am good, just based on what I know of the Survivor editors and the way that the show is edited, I think that when Survivor wants people and its audience to relate to a character, I think that Survivor plays more to the blue collar, just like going back to last season and Mike Holloway and how, you know, Jeff Probst says, you know, we have such a likable winner. And Mike Holloway was the epitome of the blue collar guy. And it was sort of like, oh, the white collar people are sort of like, you know, they're out of touch with things. And I just feel like reciting a poem does not seem like it's humanizing Steven to the Survivor audience, especially with the music that was put over that scene. It wasn't this sweeping moment of like a montage of like cut with Steven talking about like what his intentions were. I still don't understand what they're going for.
Well, if they...
I understand what Steven is going for based on what you're saying.
Right. But if the producers really wanted to, you know, not make him look good to the viewing audience, wouldn't they have had some sort of confessional by someone else there saying, yeah, we don't know what the hell Steven was doing with that poetry. We just looked at him like, you are crazy, man. And then we all gave him a polite golf clap.
We didn't get either side contextualizing what it was.
Right. It just was there.
Yeah.
Like in the middle of this episode about so many other things, it was just there. Okay. And, you know, that's so weird. I do have one more semi-random thought for you here. You talked about how much of a twist it would be to have an unmerge. And I don't think that'll happen.
Yeah.
But what would you think of this? A twist that gives them an immunity challenge where they are randomly split into two groups, like they sometimes are for reward challenges at this stage of the game. Then half of them win immunity and the other half go to tribal council without immunity. It wouldn't be an unmerge, but it would split them in half and have the potential to mix things up for one vote.
I always think that things like this sound good on paper. But then when I went back and rewatched Survivor Fiji for the Evolution Strategy, and here was Michelle Yee, who was in a pretty good spot. She was like, I think I referred to in the hierarchy of the Earl Alliance, where Earl was sort of the captain of the starship and Yao Man was the first officer. And I felt like Michelle Yee was sort of like lieutenant commander of the USS Earl. And then she just totally got screwed when they happened to have the, you know, tribes drawn up for an immunity challenge. So while I think it's good on paper that you could have somebody who's just playing a perfectly fine game up until that point, she probably wasn't going to win, but she ends up just losing because of luck of the draw at a point, you know, 20, 24 days into the game. So for that reason, because it can be so luck-based and arbitrary, I think it would be a good episode of television, but I think that somebody would get potentially screwed.
Well, and so if the producers are looking for good television, I mean, every twist that they do screws someone. I mean, the twist of the early merge screwed Cass.
Yes.
So I'm not suggesting it, mind you. So if this happens, you know, at some point in the future, don't blame me.
But if you're a producer, and then instead of Joe having a chance to win individual immunity and you lose Joe because you did some, you know, cockamamie tribe draw, and then there's a chance where they say, okay, let's, Joe is not protected at this vote. Now let's take him out here. and then, or you lose Spencer for that, I think you're going to really, you know, hear it from the audience and really be beating yourself up that you lost one of your fan favorites. Do that. Like Michelle Yee, with all due respect to Michelle Yee, I don't know if there was a big uproar about that at the time, but I think if you lose somebody who's one of your stars because of that, I think that you're going to say that, boy, I think we outsmarted ourselves with this one.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. So it was just a thought I had when I was listening to you guys talk about an unmerge. So, but anyway, getting back to, you know, you had asked me for my prediction. So with all the chaos that will still be going on, I think, even without Cass there, I wonder the same thing as you. How much is red herring? How much is real? But I'm still going to stick with real. I think that someone will indeed be blindsided. I don't think CBS advertises using the word blindside like half a dozen times, and then it's, you know, the easy vote of Sierra. I think they lose credibility if it's something like that. Not that they've ever, you know, lost credibility with something like that before, but I think someone will be blindsided. I think it could be Joe or Savage. Joe, well, he'll probably win immunity. So I'm going to say Savage. And I know these are the same two people I picked last week, but, you know, maybe I'll be right this time.
Okay. I say it'll be Sierra. I'm going to stick with, I think, what makes the most sense, because I think that it's basically for everybody involved, it's an even number. I think that you have this big group sticking together. Maybe at 11, you see the next swing in the game, but I feel like there might be some talk about getting something going. Maybe Sierra is hustling, but I just feel like that it's too easy for these people that are worried about themselves. And there's so much anybody but me right now. I say it'll still be Sierra. And I think in terms of the commercials, I think that, you know, they're just trying to make an exciting commercial. They just want people to watch the show. I don't think that necessarily people are going to be up in arms if they said, hey, they said the word blindside in the commercial, but then we didn't get one. I'm sure it's happened a bunch of times before.
Well, that's true. And, you know, if I hadn't seen that commercial, I would have predicted Sierra also. So maybe, you know, maybe it's work. They've got me all worked up here and, you know, thinking something's going to happen. And who knows, maybe it will be a blindside of Sierra because she will think that she has got things turned around and it turns out not to be. You know, we've seen them use the hashtag blindside in ways that I would say were incorrect before. So,
okay. All right. Well, you can follow David Bloomberg on Twitter. He is at David Bloomberg. David, did you have an idea for a hashtag for this episode?
Yeah, I'd say, how about chaos threat?
Chaos threat. There you go. All right. So we are going to be back into it this Wednesday night when Josh and I tackle the latest episode of Survivor coming up here at 9:15 p.m. Eastern time on Survivor Know-It-Alls. And then we'll have our exit interview and recap show for this Thursday. So until then, have a good one, everybody. Looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say in the comments. And we'll talk to you again soon. Take care, everybody. Bye.